Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
Oh, and I'm Manny.
All right, in this episode, we're going to be talking about the DC books for the week of November 16th. So we're going to dive right in. The first book we're going to be talking about is Aquaman number 11, written by Dan Abnett. The art in this issue is handled by Felipe Barones, and the colors are by Gabe Eltab. So this was probably the least political issue of Aquaman so far. But there was quite a bit of action, and Aquaman, man, did he look beat up and brutal.
Yeah, he looked pretty bad.
I did enjoy seeing the Justice League come visit him in the hospital and basically saying, yeah, we're friends. But yeah, in a way, everybody's, like, all the threads are starting to come together. Having the Justice League come and visit him in the hospital and say, you know, yeah, we trust you. You're a valuable member of the team. More than that, you're our friend. It kind of was symbolic in a way of everybody else starting to get back on Aquaman's side in a way. So that's what I mean by the fact that it's kind of the least political issue. The tide seems to be turning in Aquaman's favor. But then, of course, right when you think everything's going to be okay, maybe things are going to work out, Abnett pulls the rug out from under Aquaman. It ends on a crazy kind of cliffhanger. And, wow. I can't wait. I can't wait for the next issue. Really, really strong. Continues to be one of the better books in DC's stable right now. Really, really good. The art, you know, it's Felipe Barones. The art's okay. It's just a little inconsistent. Sometimes I really like his rendering. Other times, things just seem a little off, and it can pull me out of the story at times. I don't know if you noticed, Manny, if you go to the page with the newscaster, where he's giving the announcement about what happens at the end, look at his eyes. Doesn't it seem like there's something off there?
I'm trying to load it up right now. It's taking forever.
So it's where he says, "Oh my God." See that?
My tablet's acting a fool.
All right, well, you'll see it in a second. So anyway, the color is still outstanding, Gabe Eltab. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see it.
it's just, so there's little inconsistencies in the art like that kind of bug me. But the color's outstanding. For the most part, the art is great. I can't fault the story at all. I love what Abnett has done. The fact that it's Black Manta leading Nemo now. You know, I've complained before about it, you know, Black Manta being the only big bad that Aquaman ever seems to face, but at least they've given him a new dimension to making him the leader of this secret organization, so there's that to go on. That's not to say that I won't be looking forward to the next storyline with hopefully a different main villain for Aquaman to have to overcome. So anyway, that's my thoughts on Aquaman 11. What did you think?
You know what? Such a tragic story. I'm trying to root for the guy, and like you said, he keeps getting the rug pulled out from under him. If it's not issues with being able to marry Mira, or the Justice League kind of shunning him for a little while, or Black Manta always trying to get his revenge. I mean, Aquaman's just trying to do the right thing, but there's so many forces working against him. It sucks, man. I feel for the guy. But I guess that's why it's easy to root for him, because he is trying to do the right thing, even with all these opposing forces. And I got to say, the Abnett does a great job at continuing to show that great relationship between Aquaman and Mira. It's one of my favorite aspects of the book. Is their loyalty to each other and how they're there for each other no matter what. And even she's even willing to sacrifice her relationship with him if it means that, you know, he's going to have a better life as a king. So, it's going to be a very interesting issue coming up, because I want to see if the Justice League maybe shows up again to try and quote unquote stop him, because obviously they're not going to understand what's going on. And, cause it seems like everyone's going to start taking a side, but just like that, they'll turn on him based on the recent events.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree with you. The art's a little funky at times.
Yeah.
I like the colors, though. They're really bright. I think they fit this book really well.
Yeah, I agree. I especially love the way LTAB colors the sky in this book and the water. I think those are important aspects of backgrounds that often get overlooked. It's kind of like lettering in comics. If you do it right and it looks real and realistic and natural, nobody really notices. So you don't really get much credit for it. But if you do it wrong, and it pulls people out of the story, then you're going to get all kinds of grief for it. So I feel like coloring the backgrounds of sky and water falls into that category. All right, on to our next book. That's Batman number 11, written by Tom King. Pencils by Mikhail Yanin. Inks by Mikhail Yanin and Hugo Petrus. And colors by June Chung. So this is continuing the I Am Suicide story arc. It's part 3. Starts off with a flashback. Not sure how I feel about the fact that Tom King has really pushed Catwoman all the way over into the side of, like, fully bad. Like, full villain, no doubt about it, based on what we're hearing. I gotta think there's more to that story. Maybe he's setting something up further down the line. You know, we saw in the recruitment issue a couple issues ago that Catwoman was set to be executed. She was on death row, set to be executed by lethal injection. So this issue starts with Batman trying to catch her. Supposedly she's killed a lot of people, 237 to be exact. So I'm not sure. I just don't see her doing that. I wouldn't necessarily think that she has that in her, but Batman seems to believe it 100%. So based on that, based on what she's facing, it's not surprising what happens later in this issue, because if there's anything you can count on Catwoman to do, it's to look out for herself. So I thought, as far as that part of it went, as far as the consequences and her reaction, it was totally in character. But unless I find out that it's kind of a false flag operation, or she didn't, you know, for whatever story device Tom King uses to show that she didn't actually kill these people, either she's not responsible, she's taking the blame for someone else, or the people aren't actually dead, or some other kind of something, I kind of expect that to happen. If not, I'll be pretty surprised, because as I said, it just feels out of character. As far as this story itself, you know, this issue was a little light on progression of the main story, the main I Am Suicide Squad story. We see Catwoman's betrayal, but other than that, there's not much here. And you also have to wonder how much Batman's... He never seems surprised, you know? So I kept waiting for something to happen in the issue where there would be some clue as to Batman having anticipated Catwoman's betrayal and using that to his advantage. You know, knowing he was going to put her in this position, knowing she was going to betray him, and then it being part of the plan all along. So basically, he's double-crossing her. He's just using her as some kind of bait or whatever. Because he's Batman, and in my mind, he knows all. You know, he's such an expert on human behavior and what people are going to do that he knows ahead of time what they're going to do, sometimes before they even know themselves. So, although it didn't advance the overall story that much, at least it doesn't appear to, it was still a really enjoyable issue. The art We saw some instances in this issue of Mikhail Yanin using that device that he used so effectively in the Grayson book, showing movement through multiple figures in the same panel. Like if somebody's doing a flip, you'll see, you know, like a ghost image of them as they're going through the flip, and then, you know, the final image of them, you know, landing or whatever you want to do. There's a double print spread with Ventriloquist and Catwoman where they're down in the kind of the maintenance tunnels, if you will, of the prison, and Catwoman's on the double page spread in numerous places, kind of showing how she's moving through these tunnels with all these pipes and such. And I just thought it was really effective, really good to look at. Mikhail Yanin, definitely one of my favorite artists working today. So Batman 11, really, really, really strong. What are your thoughts, Manny?
First of all, let me say that that cover by Mikhail Yanin and Jun Chung is fantastic. I really like how Batman is shadowed and in the background, Bane, you know, ominously over him. It's one of my favorite images I think I've seen for covers out of the new 50, out of Rebirth that I've seen so far. Just really, really well done. As far as the book goes, you can kind of see it being set up a little bit in the beginning, just how much Batman cares for Catwoman, and they're kind of, I'm chasing you and I'm running, and she's kind of forewarning him what's going to happen to her if she dies. I'm sorry, if she gets caught or turned in, and Batman, being Batman, of course, turns her in. I think in this case, like you said, Catwoman ultimately is looking after herself, and she's never going to pass up an opportunity to do something for herself, especially if it's going to save her life, in my opinion. But like you said, also ultimately, I don't see Batman not seeing this happening. Maybe not to as far as the extent of killing the other two members of his team, but still, I think he may have expected something like this, and maybe the ventriloquist has a little bit more to do with it than meets the eye, because it mentions in the book how such a great character he is without Scarface. So we're gonna have to wait till the next issue and see what's really going on, or if this is Tom King really showing Catwoman's true colors, or last resort colors. And then as far as the artwork, I felt that it was really, really consistent throughout the whole book, which made it really easy to read through, to look through. It was really smooth. I really enjoyed it. So, like you said, I also feel that this was a really strong showing for Batman.
All right, up next we have Cyborg number 5, written by John Semper Jr. Pencils in this issue are Alan Jefferson and Derek Donovan. The inks are by Scott Hanna and Derek Donovan, and the colors are by Guy Major. Really been enjoying Cyborg. I think it's, again, one of the better titles. It's probably the most overlooked title, in my opinion, because I've heard the sales numbers haven't been great, but this book is spectacular. I didn't necessarily care for the art. I just thought, again, a little bit of inconsistency. And why, I don't know, why is it that so many of these artists who don't necessarily have that much experience have such a hard time drawing Cyborg correctly, in my mind? Like, he's looking at him, he looks like he's more machine than man. So, in my opinion, he should look bigger, you know, kind of bulkier. Think like Darkseid almost. I mean, not to that extent, but, you know, a bigger guy. And when we see these shots of him, he just looks so thin and so fragile. Like the first, or I guess it's the second panel, where in the background you see Moro and Sarah kind of walking away, the girl's in the little chamber, and who he thinks is his dad is standing there, and he's standing in the foreground of the panel. His head goes up above the panel. Look, he's so thin in that panel. It just doesn't look right to me. So, and there's several instances of that, several instances where the rendering just, to me, isn't up to snuff. Very, very cartoonish, looks very amateurish. So, you know, I know that Paul Pelletier obviously can't do every issue, but I would just like a little more consistency in the art. I also didn't necessarily like the idea that they were creating a female cyborg. I feel like, I mean, we don't know if they're going to be successful or not, but I feel like one of the things that's so cool about Cyborg is the unique aspect of him. There's always only ever been one person like him, one being like him. And so I feel like if it goes down the way it looks like it's going to go down from what we saw in this issue, that's going to take away a little bit from him if he's not unique anymore. Although I do also like the idea of reading some stories about a female cyborg. So from that aspect, it's a welcome. But I just thought that with the New 52, with the tweaks to Cyborg's origin, pulling in the Mother Box and Darkseid and all that, was pretty much a stroke of genius by Geoff Johns. And like I said, I like the fact that it's unique, and if they're able to replicate it here, then, you know, in my opinion, like, sky's the limit, right? You're only limited by the number of Mother Boxes that you can get your hands on. So I guess we'll see. Like I said, I'm really enjoying what John Semper Jr. is doing here, continuing to explore Victor Stone, the human side of him, and his relationships with the people around him. I love the dialogue between him and Blue about how if he's really part of Detroit, that he would kind of understand the street a little more. But even though he's from Detroit, he's a little bit of an outsider, never more so than now when he's questioning his own humanity. So, you know, Cyborg's a really, really good book. It's one of those books that really makes you think, really makes you question what it means to be human. And as all our longtime listeners know, books that make me think are my favorite books of all. So I definitely recommend picking up Cyborg. What do you have to say about Cyborg number 5 there, Manny?
Yeah, I have my good things to say about it and bad things as well. I definitely agree with you on the art. It starts off pretty well, but I guess since they have the two artists, there is a clear cut indication of where somebody else takes over, because I have to say the first pages are done pretty well, but near the end of it, I mean, it just turns super cartoony, something that I didn't really want to see in Cyborg based on what we've seen before. And then also just the lines are so thick. Near the end of it, I'm trying to pull it up. There's an image of Cyborg where he's outlined very, very, I think, too thick, in my opinion. And it really drew my eye away from the story for a little bit. So in that sense, I didn't really enjoy this particular issue. I did like the fact that he's spending a little bit more time with Blue and connecting with people that maybe he didn't think of before, such as handicapped people. He said himself that he never thought of himself as being handicapped. And as far as the female cyborg, I'm not really too sure how I feel about that. I'm kind of on the end that I hope that it's a failed experiment. And I know that sounds kind of messed up, but, you know, he really gets something out of it. Maybe this time the robot end of the character takes over too far and she's no longer human. Or in the case that she does survive, she's trying to adapt with her new abilities and her new body, per se. Cyborg is able to finally take the next step and really embrace the fact that he is human and also machine. So overall, it's a pretty good issue. And we'll see where it goes. The artwork was the little bit of a letdown in this issue.
Yeah, I feel like that's two issues in a row that we've had subpar art. And, you know, I talked about it last time that I talked about issue four. This is an example of one of the books that shows how shipping twice a month can hurt you. You can't keep a regular artist. They just can't do, you know, there's no way they can do that many pages. They physically cannot draw that many pages in that period of time. So I wouldn't mind seeing Cyborg go monthly if it means that we can get a more consistent art look, because if the sales numbers are low and they're hurting, as I indicated, the last thing you want to do is give those people that are picking it up a reason to stop picking it up. Or if somebody just is picking it up to try it out, you don't want them to be disappointed in the art and not come on board. So I think it's important that they get a decent artist on the book and keep them on the book for every issue. So next up, we have Green Arrow number 11, written by Benjamin Percy, and the art, inks, colors, everything, the whole nine, is by Juan Ferreira. So my favorite Rebirth book, and it didn't change with this issue. If I had any nitpick about the issue, let me get that out of the way first. I did feel it was not the best paced comic that I've ever read. Maybe a little rushed. Like, maybe they could have used a little more real estate to get the entire story across. I mean, only two issues, and the whole issue wasn't even on the train. It showed them still on the island getting off. So Murder on the Empire Express is the name of the story arc. So yeah, just two issues. I think maybe one more issue could have fleshed it out a little more, could have gotten to know the victim a little better, but I can't fault the art. It's absolutely superb. I love, as I've said before, when one of these artists on Green Arrow, the thing that's cool about it, them doing everything, you know, the rendering, the line work, the colors, the inking, all that. One thing that's really cool about it is the fact that it's their vision. It's as close to their vision as they can get by getting the chance to do everything themselves. So the other thing that happened in this issue, beyond the kind of the nonstop action of the actual issue itself, would be the interaction, the continued relationship that seems to be blossoming between Oliver Queen and Dinah Lance. So that's really cool. And yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of the TV show or just a fan of Green Arrow in general, you definitely should be picking up this book. It's really starting to capture the heart and soul of who Oliver Queen, Green Arrow, really is. And it's also starting to capture the classic feel of him teaming up and getting down and dirty with his partner, Dinah Lance, cleaning up the streets. Don't let your mind go into dirty places. Wrong places when I say getting down and dirty with Dinah Lance. So what are your thoughts, Manny?
I am 11 issues behind on Green Arrow.
Oh, so that's right. I forgot.
I know. Shameful. I know. I keep saying that I'm going to catch up, and then you drop another week loads of book. So
now, you know, next week I'm going to drop the book. It's going to be Green Arrow 1 through 11. That's what I'm going to drop on you. I'm not going to give you anything else.
It might work.
All right. Next up after that, we have Green Lanterns number 11, written by Sam Humphries, pencils by Robson Rocha, inks by Jay Lysine and Cam Smith, and colors by Blonde. You know, I said I was out on Green Lanterns. I'm glad that I stuck with it, because once we got beyond the Red Lantern storyline, I really started to enjoy the book. This whole Phantom Lantern storyline that's going on is a whole heck of a lot of fun. I love the character arc that they're putting Frank on, the Phantom Lantern. And I thought that it worked well and made sense, the progression. You know, he starts out as a Green Lantern, how he always dreamed and always in his mind thought that he deserved. But really, anybody that self-centered, that narcissistic, that focused on getting what they want, you know, there's got to be a seed of avarice. There's got to be a seed of greed in them. And so I wasn't surprised at all to see him actually turn into an Orange Lantern. I'm sure we'll see him go through a couple of other colors before all is said and done. But this costume, this iteration of Frank as an Orange Lantern, probably the one that makes the most sense. So really enjoying this villain that Sam Humphries has created. I didn't necessarily enjoy the characterization of Simon and Jessica in this issue. I felt like, in a way, they kind of took a step back. I feel like, in a way, a little bit of them doubting themselves and the way they're questioning themselves is a, kind of a step back for the two of them. I don't know if Sam Humphries did that on purpose. It just, it felt like to me that they as characters had kind of outgrown that kind of self-doubt. So I was a little surprised to see them second-guess themselves in this issue. But it didn't, it wasn't terrible. But it just, it did feel, you know, a little out of place. It did pull me out of the story a little bit. I remember thinking to myself, well, wait, it seems like Jessica has made constructs and that has given her more confidence. It seems like Simon reconciling things with his mother a couple of issues ago gave him some closure there and should have boosted his confidence. So to see them kind of waver in their beliefs and wonder if they're doing the right thing, it didn't quite ring true for me, but it's a minor quibble. The book looks beautiful as well. Robson Roche's pencils are amazing. A lot of detail. Really great panel layouts. The page layouts, they're, you know, they're serviceable enough. There's nothing new or exciting. You know, they're comic book panels. But his layouts within the panels, the way he varies up the angle, his sense of storytelling are as good as just about anybody in the industry. So definitely an enjoyable issue. Now, I know you're caught up on this one because this is one of your favorite Rebirth books. So what are your thoughts, Manny?
First of all, I have to agree with you on feeling that Simon and Jessica took a step backwards as far as their characterization. To me, with them doubting themselves as much as they did in this issue, it kind of made a couple of the other panels that I've read before it almost seem like a waste of time, just because I thought we were that were beyond that. But I will say that it is interesting that they chose Frank to be a Phantom Lantern, who we saw a couple of issues back. He really wanted to be a Lantern. I mean, he strives so hard to be heroic and good, and hopes that a Green Lantern ring would pick him. And yet on the other side, we have two people who don't necessarily feel like they deserved a ring due to their past or their emotions. So in a way, they're kind of fighting their preconceived notions of they're not good enough versus I should be a Green Lantern. So I thought that was great the way they have a Phantom Lantern to go against, and the fact that he's gonna probably continuously change colors a few more times makes it even more interesting. So it's a great way to develop their characters and hopefully finally once and for all shut the door on all these doubts, while at the same time overcoming a pretty cool villain in my point of view. So yeah, it does make the other issues before that a little unnecessary, a little dry, especially like the Halloween one that they had, where it didn't have much in it, much substance other than Simon trying to reconcile with his mom and things like that. It almost makes it a little bit unnecessary. I think this may have been the correct way to go to get them over the hump. maybe even say, go as far as saying, like, they shouldn't have started with Red Dawn. They should have started with something like this. I think it would have been a little bit more interesting. And then when they have a little bit more confidence, go up against Atrocious and the Red Lanterns. I think that would have made a little bit more sense. But can't complain too much. I still enjoy this book.
Yeah, I wonder why they made that choice. Maybe just a little more familiar, people a little more familiar, rather than introducing a new villain right off the bat. One thing that's interesting, because I do feel like Frank is such a good foil for Simon and Jessica, because whether we think should have been past this, or whether Humphreys had moved past the doubt in their characterization, the fact of the matter is that in this issue they're showing that doubt, and they've showed it in the past. They've shown times of emotional growth and whatever, but maybe they're just not there all the way yet. Maybe there's still the seeds of doubt that they need to overcome. But it's such a strong contrast to Frank, who believes with every fiber of his being that he deserves a ring. He always should have had a ring. He deserves to be a Lantern. There's no doubt whatsoever. So there's that. They're on two opposite ends of the spectrum, so that makes it interesting as well. But the other thing is just how classic he feels as a villain. You know, feels like something right out of the late Silver, early Bronze Age. Here's a guy who has a ring that anybody can possess and allows him to have powers of all the emotional spectrum. Just a classic kind of comic book villain that you would expect to never be completely defeated, right? Like, he'll have a scheme, he'll show up, the heroes will stop him, but he'll manage to escape, and then he'll be back in 6 or 8 issues. I could totally see Frank the Phantom Lantern being that kind of villain, where he's going to revisit people from time to time. Maybe he'll show up in the Flash book. Maybe he'll show up against the Justice League. Maybe he shows up against the Green Lantern. But in order for that to happen, in a way, he's got to kind of win this, or not necessarily win this first appearance, or win this battle, win this fight he's having with Simon and Jessica, but he's got to in some way retain the ring. Because obviously without the ring, he's nothing. So it'll be interesting to see what unfolds.
To be honest with you, I think that he would probably fit in pretty well in a Suicide Squad story, just due to the fact that I think that Amanda Waller can brainwash him enough to make him feel heroic. I think that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I could see that. But I also could see if he knew how to use his ring really well, that he could disable the bomb in his head and then, you know, do whatever the hell he wanted. Although, like you said, if she's manipulating him into thinking he's doing the right thing, then the bomb wouldn't be necessary at all. So, all right, next up we have Nightwing number 9, written by Tim Seeley. The artist is Marcio, so I guess Marcio Takata. And the colors are by Marcelo Maiello. Interesting that even though the colors are by Marcelo Maiello, he never uses his, I shouldn't say never, but he very sparingly uses his trick of going monochromatic or bichromatic. I think there's one panel early on and that's about it. But I'm not familiar with the penciler. I haven't seen his work before. It's okay. It's not my favorite. It just lacks a little detail for my taste, but it's serviceable enough. But yeah, the colors, it's Marcelo Maiello, so of course they're done very, very well. I really enjoyed this issue as it pertained to Nightwing's relationship with Superman. We get some background into this Nightwing and the new 52 Superman and how close they actually were. So it makes for an interesting dynamic. Obviously, Dick Grayson knows that the Superman he was good friends with is no longer. And he mentions, you know, about the whole alternate universe thing and doesn't know how much you can trust him. And so that whole backdrop for the rest of the story, or backdrop to the rest of the story, was really enjoyable. The rest of the story, honestly, I felt was a little weak. It just kind of felt like villain of the week kind of thing. And the only reason that this villain, this thing even went down was to kind of move Dick around geographically, put him in Metropolis so he could run into Superman, put him in Bloodhaven so it could, because we know we have something with Nightwing and Bloodhaven coming down the pipe. And so, I don't know. It felt a little formulaic. It felt a little rushed in a way it didn't feel like much happened. And the villain was very much a kind of paint by numbers. So, not my favorite issue of Nightwing, but with everything that it has been going on in the book, maybe it did need an issue like this to kind of slow down, let everybody catch their breath, both the creative team and the Nightwing fans out there, and start the next arc, Bloodhaven, or whatever they're going to call it. Start the next one arc fresh, and hopefully bring back some of those longtime Nightwing fans that were following when Chuck Dixon was the writer and he first, Dick Grayson first went to Bloodhaven. So I guess only time will tell. But it was an enjoyable issue. Just, as I said, like action-wise, plot-wise, it's definitely one of, you know, on the lower end of the scale. What are your thoughts, Manny?
To be honest with you, I didn't really enjoy it. I just kind of wanted to get through it. It was on the low end as far as the Nightwing issues we've seen before. I tend to not necessarily agree with your thought of it needing a break, because I felt like that break was Night of the Monster Men. So I was really hoping to, you know, see some of the characters that were introduced before, to continue a Nightwing story and not really get this kind of almost interlude issue with Superman. So it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great either. I just kind of want to move on and get the next one.
Yeah, but after Night of the Monster Men, we had the Raptor story.
Yeah, I kind of want to see more of that. This felt a little bit out of place for me.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, it almost felt a little bit like a fill-in issue. So I could definitely see that. All right, up next, Suicide Squad number 6, written by Rob Williams, pencils by Jim Lee, inks by Scott Williams, Sandra Hope, Matt Banning, and Jim Lee, colors by Alex Sinclair, and then the backup was written by Rob Williams with art by Carlos DeAnda and colors by Gabe Eltab. This was my favorite issue of Suicide Squad up to this point. You know, I've complained in the past about having the co-feature or the backup feature taking up a lot of space and not leaving a lot of room for a lot of progression in the main story. So this is probably the issue where I got the most. It almost felt like a full issue of actual Suicide Squad. A lot goes on. And, you know, again, we're seeing everything that's happened up to this point, the threads start to come together. Things are starting to make sense. And there's a lot more to come that is really going to raise the stakes for the members of the Suicide Squad. We see Captain Boomerang make his return. We see Harley Quinn, a side of Harley Quinn that in a way we've never seen before. Not since she's been Harley Quinn. So that is super interesting. A lot of moving parts here. And everything's starting to come together. Without question, for me, this is the best issue so far. I think maybe it might have taken Rob Williams a little time to kind of get the feel to be able to plot out. Because I'm sure he's used to writing 20-page stories. And here, you know, in the Suicide Squad title, he only has 12. So, you know, it's very hard to self-edit. And for all we know, he's taking scripts that ideas he originally intended to be one whole issue, and he's maybe trying to break it up so that and then stretch it out to two. So instead of having 20 pages, he ends up having 24 because it's 212 issue story or page, 212 page stories rather than 120 page. So then is it, do you fill in the other four? Like, what exactly do you do with that? So it's probably a learning curve, probably something going on there. But it feels like he's starting to get it right. The art by Jim Lee, you know, it's Jim Lee. He's a living legend. He's a master, and for a very good reason. I love the way he draws Harley Quinn. Love the way he draws Katana. Love the way he draws Killer Croc. So I'm very much looking forward to the next issue. I hope that Williams is able to kind of keep this high level of action and that he's figured out how to write, you know, for the amount of real estate that he has. The backup feature with Killer Croc, it was pretty straightforward. It wasn't the best backup feature, but it certainly did what I think these backup features are intended to do, and that's introduce new readers to the comic book history of these Suicide Squad characters that maybe they learned about or saw for the first time in the Suicide Squad movie. So it was drawn very well by Carlos DeAnda, and the colors by Gabe Altib are in the backup are outstanding. So, yeah, great, great issue of Suicide Squad. Did you get a chance to read it, Manny?
No, not yet. Haven't got a chance to.
All right, well, take your time with it because it's a really good episode. And you're going to, I know what a huge Harley Quinn fan you are, so you're really going to like where Rob Williams takes her. That's the thing I'm looking forward to the most about the next issue is seeing exactly where Harley goes from here.
Nice.
All right, the next book we're going to talk about is Superman number 11. The writers are Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. Pencils by Patrick Gleason, inks by Mick Gray, Mark Morales, and Christian Alame, and the colors are by John Kalas. So this is continuing the Super Sons story arc, the arc that's going to lead into the Super Sons title, I imagine. So it's In the Name of the Fathers, the actual story arc here in Superman. It's enjoyable. I love seeing the interaction with John and Damian. I can totally see how being the sons of their fathers, these two living legends, these two heroes, that they wouldn't necessarily get along. I think that the bickering back and forth and the distrust of each other is totally natural, totally believable. And of course, when it comes down to it, and that all the chips are on the table, they do eventually team up for the greater good, but it's in despite of themselves. You know, they're not going to get along, and I have a feeling that the Super Sons book is going to be enjoyable in that it's not going to be one of these team-up books where they're like, oh, let's go fight crime because we're best buds and blah, blah, blah. It's going to be more like they're forced together either by their fathers or through circumstances. And it just reads a little more realistic for me. So it's a break from what we've had in Superman so far. There's not really much else here in the story other than the focus on John and Damian. But that doesn't lessen the story or the value at all. I enjoyed seeing the interaction between the two Super Sons, as I said. The art by Patrick Gleason, it's, you know, it's normal Patrick Gleason art. So very expressive faces, a little bit of anime influence, tends to draw big eyes and sometimes things are a little exaggerated. Things are a little warped for effect, maybe a bit heavy on the lines. But I have a feeling that's because he inks himself digitally. So he's never been one of my favorite artists. I think that I actually enjoy his writing more than I enjoy his rendering. But still a beautiful book to look at. His storytelling is probably the strength of his art for me. So I love that the Superman titles are of such high quality since Rebirth has started. So and the numbers are bearing that out as well. So what do you think, Manny?
Overall, I really enjoyed this issue. It's everything I thought that
you love Damian, so it's not surprising.
Yeah, I really like Damian. I like his "I'm Batman's son. I got trained by League of Assassins, so I'm better than you" attitude. It's different than everyone. I know you despise Damian.
Yeah, so, you know, I was starting to think maybe I was going to like him based on what John Boy told me about the Teen Titans book. But then he left, so now I'm back to fearing the worst for that book. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, that one we will. But I think it's kind of a difficult story to write too, because Superman and Batman themselves sometimes don't get along together, just based on who they are. I mean, Batman doesn't trust the alien, and Superman doesn't trust the fact that Batman keeps kryptonite around. And now you're going to add their kids. They see their fathers as, of course, you know, legendary status. We know how much Jonathan looks up to Superman, and we know to some degree how much Damian respects Batman. So you know, the whole time you're going to be my dad's better than yours, and I'm going to show you up because I was raised by them. By him particularly, and he taught me better than your dad kind of feel. But at the same time, they're going to have to coexist, and that's the whole reason why they're going through this, I guess you can call it training. At the end of the day, you can still tell that they're trained by heroes because they put their differences aside and save the day. But it's not without their struggles. I just find it really funny how, Batman and Superman are held by this weird clay face monster thing, and Superman's like really worried, and Batman's like, "Nah, just wait, hold on." Every time Superman wants to intervene, Batman right there say, "No, just wait, let it go a little bit further," and it really sets up their book very, very well, I think, because you kind of, like you said, get the feeling of what you're going to get. You're not going to get this super friends or this really friendly team up. You're going to get not a Damian versus Jonathan, but a more like, "I'm going to show you up because I'm the better of the two, because I was raised by Batman or because I was raised by Superman." They're going to be flying their colors quite often, I think, through that whole series, and it's going to make for a very entertaining book, just like this issue was so entertaining.
Yeah, like brothers, but brothers that are competitive because they both want to be the best. And it's almost like each of them thinks, "I don't necessarily need to come in first. You know, I don't need Batman and Superman to see me as like the best hero I can be. They just need to see me as better than the other guy."
There you go. Yeah.
Like if these two were running a race, they wouldn't need to win. They just need to make sure that they come in. You know, like Damian wants to make sure he comes in before Jonathan, and Jonathan would want to make sure he comes in before Damian. So it's that kind of feel. Like, "I don't need to beat everybody, but I just need to beat you. Because for whatever reason, I just don't like you." So, yeah. Interesting dynamic, to be sure. All right. The last book we're going to talk about is Trinity number 3. It's written by Francis Manapole. Pencils by Clay Mann. The inks by Clay Mann and Seth Mann. And the colors are by Brad Anderson. So up to this point, this entire book was done by Francis Manapole. The first two issues, Manapole wrote, rendered, inked, colored, like the whole nine. This is the first issue where he's had some help. Obviously, that's a lot to expect from somebody to be able to do the entire art for a book and also write it. So, not surprising that he, you know, only went two issues, and now, you know, he's having some help on the art side of things. I expect this might happen for an issue or two, because he's probably Francis Manapul's probably working on like issue 5 or 6 at this point. So maybe we're going to get Clayman, you know, handling the majority of the art duties on like 3 and 4. Meanwhile, Francis Manapul's plugging away on 5 and 6. So I have absolutely no problem with Clayman's pencils, with his art style. I think it fits the book very well. I think it's beautiful to look at. There are a few panels where I'm just like, man, that art is so good. Like the one where Lois is trying to break down the barn door. Great panel. You can kind of feel her panic, feel the strain of her trying to open this door. So great art by Clayman. Another spot where I think it shines well is seeing Bruce Wayne as a young boy talking to a psychiatrist. And you can just, in his body language, it conveys so much of the angst he's feeling and the sorrow. And I love the page layout where we get, you know, a far kind of full look, and then it zooms in as Bruce Wayne is talking, getting closer, and you get a closer look at his face, and you do feel that sorrow that he's feeling and the guilt that he has that he survived. So incredibly well done by Clayman. I also have to give a lot of credit to Francis Manapul for writing these scenes. And I mean, Francis Manapul is an artist himself, so I'm sure when he is talking to Clayman, when they're collaborating on the issue, Francis is probably saying, okay, here's kind of how I see it. You know, they kind of have that artist shorthand. And so I'm sure that as far as the storytelling and the panels and the progression and plotting, that it's definitely a collaborative effort between the two. So just because the art is so absolutely gorgeous doesn't mean that Clayman should get all the credit for that. You got to give some credit to Francis as well. And this is just one of those books where it just really shows that the sum is greater than the parts. So you put Francis Manapul together with Clayman, and you, with those two working on the book, it just elevates it. And that's not to say that the first couple issues that were done, you know, with Francis handling all the art duties were subpar. They were gorgeous. And I think I compared the first issue to a Norman Rockwell painting. I don't know that I can give higher praise than that for what Manapul was trying to achieve. So I don't want to diminish Francis by saying that this issue was so much better, but I just think that with two great minds, two incredibly talented individuals, they couldn't help but produce something that was really amazing. So, yeah, art-wise, no faults at all. Absolutely gorgeous book. As far as the story goes, we're starting to get some hints of what's going on. Still hasn't been fully explained yet. I didn't necessarily care for the device where the heroes were being seen as villains by Bruce Wayne, by these monsters, mythical creatures or whatever. I just didn't care for that. It felt a little hokey to me. But I loved the last page, Lois taking matters into her own hands, and we see who, you know, open secret that we've kind of known all along, who the big bad in this first arc of the story is, and it makes total and complete sense. So I am looking forward to the next issue, and I'm very much looking forward to the end of the arc where we kind of see, okay, so what's going to happen with the Trinity? I know Francis had said that he wants this Trinity book, obviously, to be Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, because that's the Trinity, but he wants this book to really, when you think about it, it's not Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, it's Clark, Kent, Diana Prince, and Bruce Wayne. He wants to explore how their relationships are going to grow out of this, no pun intended, being that Poison Ivy is the villain, but see how their relationship is going to grow based on this shared experience they're having that's kind of launching their friendship and trust for one another, I think is the best way to put it. So, yeah, Trinity is definitely a quality book. If you haven't picked up any of the issues, I definitely recommend that you go out and give them a try. What do you have to add there, Manny?
Well, I haven't fully read this issue yet. I kind of looked it over because Clay Mann is one of my favorite artists, based on what he did on Ninjak and also what he did on that Poison Ivy, The Cycle of Life and Death. Man, I just really love his artwork. It's just so detailed. And nothing against Francis Manapul, because his artwork's fantastic as well. Kind of like you were saying, you're getting the best. You're getting two of the best here on this very important title. So it's very, very beautiful to look at. And I'll be finishing it soon enough.
Yeah, like I said, if I have any nitpick, it's just I didn't care for those panels or pages when, you know, they're showing Batman, but it's seen how Bruce Wayne is seeing him, where he's like half Man-Bat, half Batman. And he sees Wonder Woman as like a half Minotaur, half Wonder Woman. I mean, really, he's seen him as all monster. But the panel is laid out in such a way that we're kind of getting a glimpse of what he sees, but then we see what it is reality, so that we can kind of see the difference between the two. I mean, it's clever the way that it's done, but I just don't care. I don't care for that as a story device. It seems a little tired to me. What is interesting is that on the first couple pages, there are a few panels where the panels like literally spell out words, which is very much a I'm totally drawing a blank. Will Eisner thing to do, something that we've seen Francis Manapul do in his art time and time again, especially starting with the New 52 Flash title that he was on when the New 52 relaunched. That was kind of the first place that we really started seeing that Will Eisner influence on Manapul's art. So being that he's not the artist on this book, but we still get some of that, I thought that was very interesting. I wonder how much artistic input Manapul has with Clay Mann. You know, is he just like, hey, do whatever you want? Or is he like, hey, so here's my thought on, you know, how we can make it more interesting and how we can have the art be a little consistent, maybe thinking about how it's going to look in the trade. But having Clay Mann use a few of those tricks that Manapul's used in the past, like incorporating the titles and the credits into the actual art that's in the story. So really cool when artists do that. And like Manny said, Clay Mann, incredibly talented, superstar in the making for sure. Love, love, love the art. So, all right, I guess that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as find Manny's written blog, my written blog, and of course our famous sketch gallery. Also, make sure you're following us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram. Keep up to date on when new episodes are released and convention coverage. I'm also going to be, sometime in the next week, maybe this weekend, I'm going to be putting up the categories for our year-end awards, I guess you'd say. I want to get the categories up a little earlier this year. I know we have a lot of new listeners, so I want to make sure everyone has a lot of time to think back and go through the books they bought this year, so they can have some kind of an idea, and we could talk about it on the website or in one of the message threads, or you can send us an email and we'll talk about it on the show. I'm sure we'll talk about it several times, who we're thinking about nominating and things like that. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Talk to you next time.